Okay then, looking forward to the last talk of this conference by the master of the ultraviolet. Here we have Tristan Denon.
Thank you. Thanks, Oliver. Everyone can hear me okay? Good. Of course, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to give this final talk of the conference. It's been a great conference. I've had a lot of fun this week in Zurich. I hope everybody else has. And to round up the week, I'd like to talk about some work over the past few years with my colleagues Zvi Byrne, Scott Davies, Yutin Wang, Josh Noe, and Smirnov and Smirnov, about examining ultraviolet properties of perturbative supergravity theories, specifically N equals 4 supergravity. Now, these days, at least to some extent, life in supergravity is focused on the rather grandiose question, is a profoundly new framework needed for understanding quantum gravity, or is there more to be learned from conventional approaches? And to a large extent, these are not mutually exclusive questions, and I'm not going to give you any definite answers on these today. I'm going to give you more humble contributions, just looking order by order in perturbation theory. So a brief outline of what I want to say is I'm going to start with some motivations to try to explain to you why a person would choose to spend their time calculating 3 and 4 loop amplitudes in some esoteric theory of supergravity. I'd like to give a lightning review of BCJ and double copy, just for the sake of being self-contained here. I know we've heard about these in other talks this week. And then, for the main part of the talk, I'm going to present a series of explicit results, explicit calculations of ultraviolet divergences, in particular at particular loop orders and different dimensions. And throughout these, I'm going to highlight a few unexplained cancellations in a couple of cases. And there will also be a role played by some anomalies in N equals 4 supergravity. And at the very end, I want to get to this punchline that we see a few cases where there are what we've termed enhanced cancellations that go beyond standard symmetry arguments and considerations. Okay. So the reason we look at supergravity amplitudes is that supergravity, much like Super-Yang-Mills theory, has this property that because of the enhanced symmetry, the supersymmetry and duality symmetry in these theories, we can take this two-pronged approach to investigating the theory. On one hand, the symmetries, the duality symmetry and supersymmetry, can help tame the naive power counting from gravity's two-derivative coupling. So if you write down just a Feynman diagram in some gravity theory, you know every vertex here contributes two powers of momentum to the numerator of a Feynman integral, and that is catastrophic for ultraviolet behavior. But on the other hand, we have these powerful new methods of calculating in supergravity theories given to us by Byrne, Carrasco, and Johansson back in 2008 that allow us to access high loop orders, all the way up to 4 loops now. So this allows us to compare our theoretical understanding with explicit calculations. We can verify whether we understand everything or if there are things that are unexplained and we need to look further. And of course, if we're ultimately looking into a theory of quantum gravity, we need it to have good control of ultraviolet behavior. Now what this means is we really want to understand the renormalization group flow and the effective theory of our gravity. And this is dictated by the scale dependence, that is, these log mu squared terms, where mu is a scale given in the dimensional regularization. Right? So typically what happens is we're calculating some L-loop Feynman integral, and we go to evaluate the integral in dimensional regularization. There's a global factor that looks something like this pulled out. So there's some kinematic invariant here divided by mu squared, where this is the two epsilon dimensional components of the loop momentum. Raised to some power, depending on epsilon, and then there's a power series in epsilon. So because the Feynman integrals look like this, this really pegs the mu squared behavior to singularities in epsilon. So therefore, we use the ultraviolet divergence, rather than mu squared, we use the divergence as a proxy for the scale dependence, and we just calculate directly these divergences, because it's just somewhat easier. So this is what I'm going to do today. Just look at these poles in epsilon. Now, most of this talk, as I've already said, is about half-maximal supergravity, N equals 4 supergravity, mostly in 4 dimensions, but I'll go in higher dimensions a little bit, too. So this is a theory with these states. Here's the graviton. There are 6 vectors. two scalars. This was first introduced in 1977 by Das and then reformulated the following year by Kremer, Shirk, and Ferrara. It has a duality symmetry given by SU4 times SU1, 1. And the two scalars in this theory parameterize the coset space, SU1, 1 over U1. But one kind of special thing about this theory, among other supergravity theories, is that N equals 4 supergravity in four dimensions has an anomaly in this U1. It's a subgroup of this duality group. And that means, depending on how we choose to gauge this U1, we can have different quantizations of classically equivalent theories. So, for our formulation, we're using this SU4 formulation of Kremer, Shirk, and Ferrara. Oh, and this anomaly was discussed by Marcus in 1985. Okay, so long ago, in the lifetime of supergravity, very early, it was understood that supersymmetry alone already eliminates all ultraviolet divergences in pure four-dimensional supergravity theories up to the three-loop order. And at three loops, there's some expected counterterm, which is given by four powers of a Riemann tensor with some contractions. There's a long list of people who have worked on this in the past. In N equals 8 supergravity, more recent work, given by this big list, has shown that supersymmetry and duality symmetry rule out all counterterms in this particular theory all the way up to seven loops. And at seven loops, there's an expected counterterm, which is eight powers of derivatives and four Riemann tensors. Now, I'm talking about N equals 4 supergravity. So there's similar work in N equals 4 that shows that the seven-loop counterterm has an analog in N equals 4, and indeed in N equals 5 and N equals 6 supergravity. In N equals 4, this analog is all the way down at three loops. But we'll see in a moment that this divergence is not present. Okay. Now, these duality symmetries that I'm talking about, E77 is perhaps the most well-known one. But all the way down to N equals 4 supergravity, we have analogous symmetries, where these are the coset spaces that the scalars in each theory parameterize. And in every one of these theories, these symmetries can tame ultraviolet divergences. So this work by Bossard, Haustell, and Van Hove shows us that in each one of these theories, we still have a candidate counterterm. Everything is ruled out all the way up to the loop order given by L equals N minus 1, N being the number of supercharges here, or the N extended supergravity, right? Now, this is an important equation here. So if there's one equation that you remember throughout this talk, it'll be L equals N minus 1. It'll come up over and over. And for N equals 8, then this gives L equals 7, right? And this came from a nice analysis by one of our hosts and collaborators in 2010. So if I'm talking about calculations, let me just give you a brief summary of how these calculations are done. It roughly follows three steps. Ultimately, we need to be able to construct a supergravity integrand that then we need to integrate. So the first two steps here are about constructing that integrand. First, we want to work in Super-Yang-Mills theory. We want to find a representation of our Super-Yang-Mills theory amplitude that satisfies what's called color kinematics duality. We've heard about this in Simon's talk, in John Joseph's talk, and Donald's talk this week. This step is generally quite difficult, and I'll talk about it more in the next couple of slides. But once we have such a representation, the second step here is essentially trivial. From that knowledge of Yang-Mills, we can construct a gravity amplitude using what's called the double copy method. And from there, there's a series of straightforward but practically challenging steps to extract ultraviolet divergences from the integrals that we get. So this color kinematics duality that we've already heard about this week was bestowed upon us by Byrne, Carrasco, and Johansson, BC and J, back in 2008, and it provides a construction of gravity amplitudes from knowledge of Yang-Mills amplitudes. So in general, one can organize any given Yang-Mills amplitude, at least at tree level, into this sum over trivalent graphs, where we have color factors here associated with some Lie algebra, kinematic numerators, which are linear combinations of dot products of polarization vectors and momenta, and then propagators associated with the cubic graph. And this color kinematics duality tells us that there's some rearrangement of this amplitude in this form such that every numerator, every triplet of numerators corresponding to a triplet of color factors that satisfy the Jacobi identity, these corresponding numerators also satisfy the same identity. Okay. So a simple example of this is a four-gluon amplitude at tree level, just pure Yang-Mills theory. Here we can write down the amplitude quite easily. It's just four Feynman diagrams. Each one has dependence on some color factors. There are three color factors given by these. Color factors satisfy Jacobi identity among themselves. And all we need to do is organize this amplitude by collecting the light color factors. So the contact diagram here gets pushed into all three terms. And then pulling out a propagator and then defining what we mean by NS, NT, and U as the coefficients of these terms. All right, so these numerators here look like this. So if you go do this in your favorite gauge, or maybe you don't want to use Feynman diagrams, you can just calculate using whatever your favorite calculational method is. You just do this naively. What you will find is that at the end of the day, your three numerators are going to satisfy the exact same identity as the color factors. So this is pretty cool. But you may say, okay, this is just four gluons. It's just an accident of low point. And indeed, you're kind of right. If you go and try the same thing at five gluons, just write down Feynman diagrams, you'll find that the numerators don't satisfy the same identities as color factors. However, there is some rearrangement, some non-trivial rearrangement that goes beyond some gauge choice. It's quite a non-trivial rearrangement, but you can find some representation of the amplitude such that these properties hold. But what we're interested in now is gravity amplitudes, not Yang-Mills amplitudes. So BC and J also told us in 2008 that once we have a Yang-Mills amplitude in this special form, what we can do is take this color factor and replace it with one of these special numerators, and we've magically constructed a gravity amplitude. Now, throughout this talk, I'll be referring to Yang-Mills amplitudes as with the letter A and gravity with the letter M. So in this sense, we can say that gravity numerators are a double copy of gauge theory ones. And this was proven in 2010. But one key feature is that the two copies here in the gravity amplitude don't need to come from the same Yang-Mills theory. In fact, there's a whole whole zoo of theories that one can construct just by choosing different copies on the two sides, or different theories on the two sides of the double copy. So, for example, one can construct N equals 8 supergravity by taking a double copy of two maximally supersymmetric Yang-Mills theories. Or N equals 4 supergravity by taking N equals 4 super Yang-Mills theory times pure Yang-Mills theory. One could also think about doing N equals 2 super Yang-Mills times N equals 2 super Yang-Mills here, and that would work as well. But the theory you get in that case would then not be pure N equals 4 supergravity, it would be N equals 4 supergravity plus a couple of vector multiplets. And you can do the same thing for N equals 5, or N equals 0, which is a graviton, a dilaton, and an antisymmetric tensor. And there are more sophisticated constructions by a whole number of authors. But one nice feature of these constructions is that at the end of the day, we're left with relatively compact expressions for gravity amplitudes. But what we really want is multi-loop. This has all been a tree-level discussion so far. We want multi-loop amplitudes. And so 2 years after their original paper, BC and J came back and told us that, indeed, one can do the same thing at loop level. And it works the same way. You just have to organize your diagrams into triplets if you have color factors associated with these diagrams that satisfy Jacobi identity, then you have to make sure the corresponding numerators satisfy the same identity. And once you do that, you can take your loop-level Yang-Mills amplitude, just replace the color factor with a kinematic numerator, and you've magically constructed a gravity amplitude. Okay, so this is the construction that we're going to be using for N equals 4 supergravity. Now the question arises, how far can we go with this construction? This all depends on knowledge of Yang-Mills theory. What do we know about Yang-Mills theory that we can then use to construct gravity? In every case that we're going to look at, one of the two copies of the double copy is going to come from maximally supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory. So this is where we know the most, where we can go to the highest loop order. So this table is indicating what is known, or what color duality satisfying numerators are known in N equals 4 super Yang-Mills theory. So at 4-point amplitudes, we know things all the way up to 4 loops. And John Joseph talked to us earlier this week about 5-loop progress. At 5 point, up to 3 loops, and then at 1 loop, in principle, one has a construction to any number of points, but this is conjectural to some extent. So I'm going to use just the top row of this table, 1 loop, 2 loop, 3 loops, and 4 loops, 4 point, n equals 4 superangles, numerators, feeding that into double copy in the next part of this talk to construct n equals 4 and n equals 5 eventually supergravity amplitudes. So I'm going to go loop order by loop order. And bear in mind this equation, L equals n minus 1. I want to get up to L equals 3 and L equals 4. So L equals 3 is n equals 4 supergravity. L equals 4, n equals 5 supergravity is going to become important. So let's begin with L equals 1. L equals 1 is kind of a trivial case. The Yang-Mills amplitude just organizes itself into a scalar box integral multiplied by some tree-level Yang-Mills, super-Yang-Mills amplitude. So this factor here carries all of the supersymmetry here. The numerator is totally symmetric in external legs. All the triangle numerators vanish through Jacobi identities because of that. And this is related to the no-triangle property of n equals 4 super-Yang-Mills theory. And one key feature of this representation is that this numerator here does not depend on loop momentum, which is going to allow us, when we construct our gravity amplitudes, to just factorize one of these numerators outside of the integrals. Okay. So let's see how that works. If we go in through the double copy, take these duality-satisfying numerators and construct a supergravity amplitude which has q plus 16 supercharges, so q is the number of supercharges on one side of the copy, and 16, we're using the n equals 4 super-Yang-Mills amplitude on the other side. Then we get, because these numerators don't depend on loop momentum, they factorize out of the integrals, and we get this factorization into this n equals 4 box numerator and a linear combination of one loop Yang-Mills amplitudes. Whether these are super-Yang-Mills amplitudes or pure Yang-Mills amplitudes doesn't really matter. But this linear combination is very particular. I'll tell you why in a second. So if we choose Q here to be 16, then this would be giving us n equals 8 supergravity. Q equals 0 gives n equals 4 supergravity. Let's take a look at this factorization. What we see because of this linear combination here of just Yang-Mills amplitudes is the possibility that supergravity amplitudes can vanish in the ultraviolet even when Yang-Mills amplitudes don't. Right, so Yang-Mills color-ordered amplitudes are separated from one another by color factors here, whereas this linear combination doesn't separate these different amplitudes, it just adds them all up together. So you could have each contribution here being ultraviolet divergent, but the sum being ultraviolet finite. And one very interesting thing that happens in four dimensions is that Yang-Mills theory is renormalizable. And part of the renormalizability of Yang-Mills theory is the implication that there is a particular linear combination of amplitudes that has to vanish in the ultraviolet. And this linear combination that vanishes because of renormalizability of Yang-Mills theory is precisely the same linear combination that's appearing in the supergravity amplitude. So we can see that at one loop, one loop's a pretty low loop order, but at one loop, supergravity amplitudes can be and are indeed better behaved than Yang-Mills theory precisely because of this double copy construction. Well, that's pretty interesting, I think. So this is this zero that's appearing here, or this zero that, well, not this zero, but this zero that's appearing here. So this is the beginning of a collection of results. The details don't really matter. This is n equals 4 supergravity in the ultraviolet. So these first four, let me just give you the notation here. This H means a graviton multiplet, and V, or V1 and V2, represent n equals 4 vector multiplets. The pure graviton multiplet amplitude vanishes in the ultraviolet. These two, including vector multiplets, don't vanish, but they have this factor of ds minus 2. Now, ds minus 2 is due to this U1 duality anomaly that I spoke about earlier, that I mentioned earlier. Ds is called ds because it's an auxiliary dimension that's used for state counting. We can also do something similar in six dimensions, just going through the double copy and calculate amplitudes, and we find these results. Here we see this 26 minus ds, which, okay, it's suggestive of bosonic string theory, but I don't know. But really, this is just one loop. There are no real surprises here. So let's go on to two loops and see what happens. So two loops, the color dual representation is slightly more complicated, but only slightly. Okay, there are two different graphs. Again, we see that there are no triangles in this basis of diagrams. And the numerators of these two graphs are the same. And they're given here. So there's some Mandelstam invariant multiplied by, again, this factor of ST A tree from N equals 4 superangles. And again, they all have this very nice property that they're independent of loop momentum. So once we feed them through double copy, they're going to factorize outside of the integrals again. So to see how that happens, let's write down the two-loop Yang-Mills amplitude. So here we have various color factors multiplied by color-ordered amplitudes. It's not so important the way we've written it here. But in four dimensions, this is still a renormalizable theory, so the renormalizability should give some constraints between the ultraviolet divergences of these color-ordered amplitudes. And then recall the instructions to replace each one of these color factors with one of the numerators from the previous slide to construct a two-loop, now, there's a typo here, a two-loop supergravity amplitude. So we do that. So now we can see each one of the color factors has been replaced by an S, a T, or a U. This N equals 4 superangles tree-level amplitude factorizes out of the integrals, and we're left with some particular linear combination of color-ordered Yang-Mills amplitudes. Now again, I say this is a particular linear combination because indeed, in four dimensions, this is, again, precisely the combination of amplitudes that are UV finite due to the renormalizability of Yang-Mills theory. Okay, so that's pretty cool. Again, we can see, even up to two loops now, starting to get less and less trivial, even at two loops, supergravity amplitudes can be better behaved in the ultraviolet than Yang-Mills theory. So here is just one example for N equals 4 supergravity of an amplitude involving four vector multiplets. This is a four-dimensional divergence. It's, details here are not so important, but you see this ds minus 2. Again, this is the same ds minus 2 that's related to this U1 anomaly. There are no real surprises here. But if we go up to five dimensions, we see our first surprise. Now we want to calculate a four-graviton amplitude in five dimensions. So in five dimensions, this notation n equals 4 is a little disingenuous or not quite right. So we may start calling this half-maximal supergravity, or 16 supercharged supergravity. But in this case, so I've tried to highlight it with a big bang here, this is a case where there is a known allowed counterterm in this theory. By all symmetry arguments, we have a counterterm that's available to us. But for some reason, we go and calculate it, and the coefficient of this counterterm vanishes. The rest of these, again, are not surprising. I guess the 10 minus ds is suggestive, but could be just numerology. But because of this factorization, through the double copy, remember, the n equals 4 super Yang-Mills numerators factorize out of the integrals. Because of this factorization, we can do in five dimensions a similar argument to the renormalizability argument in four dimensions, just now with an f cubed counterterm. To say that, to understand the vanishing of this coefficient through double copy. Okay. Now, one and two loops have this special property that the n equals 4 super Yang-Mills numerators are independent of loop momentum. That's no longer going to be the case at three loops. So life is going to get a little harder now. So here are the color dual numerators at three loops. In N equals 4 super Yang-Mills theory, these were given to us by BCJ. We saw these graphs earlier this week. There are 12 of them. For each one of these numerators, a factor of STA tree pulls out. But there is still loop momentum dependence in each one of these taus here. These precise expressions don't really matter for this talk. It's nice to notice that they all fit on one slide, so they're easy to work with. And these 12 graphs have the property that there are no triangle subdiagrams in them. So if you go through Jacobi identities using these numerators, you find that all the numerators corresponding to triangle graphs vanish. Okay. So let's use these. We plug these into our construction of n equals 4 supergravity in four dimensions. Now for the second copy of Yang Mills, we're going to use just pure Yang Mills, n equals zero Yang Mills, and we're going to construct it using Feynman diagrams. Because one nice property of this double copy is that you don't need both copies to satisfy the color kinematics duality. Only one of them does need to do that. So there's some procedure, some standard procedure to extract ultraviolet divergences once you have integrals in hand. So this is something we did in 2012. What we find is, okay, each one of these diagrams in general has some divergence, but when you add everything up, sum over permutations, what you find is that the sum of all of these contributions vanishes. Or, in other words, this amplitude, the three-loop amplitude in n equals 4 supergravity is ultraviolet finite. So this was a big surprise when it came out. So this is one of these cases where L equals n minus 1. Right? This is one of these much-studied cases in four dimensions where, by all known arguments, there should be an allowed counterterm here. So the vanishing of this divergence remains unexplained to this day through symmetry understandings, although there is some understanding from string theory from Turkin and Van Hove. But from a symmetry perspective, because this art of the fourth counterterm is allowed, this is a puzzle. Now the rest of these, again, we see this ds minus 2 squared in the matter amplitudes, so this is related to the U1 anomaly again. The rest of these are not very interesting, but this first one is. Okay, we have an example of an L equals N minus 1 counterterm that's not there, that should be. So we can say, what about the next case? What if we increase the supersymmetry to N equals 5 supergravity and look at for loops? Let's try to do that. Now, for loop calculation, by any standards, is more difficult than a three loop calculation. In this case, now we have more than 12 graphs. There are 82 graphs, or 82 color dual numerators in the n equals 4 super Yang Mills theory. They're too long to put here, but the worst of them has about 100 terms, which it's too long for a slide, but it's perfectly reasonable for a computer. Again, a factor of STH repulls out of every numerator, and in general, the numerators have up to 2 powers of loop momentum in them. Now, this could be a lot worse. There are only 82 graphs here. The exact representation that Bern, Carrasco, Dixon, Johansson, and Roybon found has the nice property that through the Jacobi identities you can see that no triangle subdiagrams appear. And of course, oops. And you can see in these pictures that there are no subdiagrams that are triangles. Okay, so let's take these and try to construct an n equals 5 supergravity amplitude at 4 loops. To do that, we need a second copy of Yang-Mills theory. So we have n equals 4 super Yang-Mills on one side, and on the other side we take n equals 1 super Yang-Mills theory, just constructed again through Feynman diagrams. So it's a for loop calculation. We buy some extra mathematical licenses. We lock ourselves in our basement offices and emerge a year later with an illegible slide. So these are the 82 graphs, or contributions to the ultraviolet divergence from the 82 graphs, grouped into essentially arbitrary groupings, 6 groupings, I think. So what you notice on the left-hand table here is that it adds up to this number here, which you can't read. And on the right side, it adds up to this number here, which you can't read. But the difference between these numbers is just a minus sign. So you add everything up, and everything vanishes like magic. That is to say, we have another surprise. This is the second example now of one of these cases of L equals N minus 1 that is UV finite and unexplained through symmetry arguments, or any argument for that matter. And puzzles are starting to add up here. So how much further can we go? Well, the next case would be n equals 6 at 5 loops. But that's out of reach for now because we heard the 5 loop story earlier this week. We don't have these 5 loop BCJ numerators to work with. We could think about going away from this L equals N minus 1 bound and look at 4 loops in N equals 4. In this case, this is above this critical line, so there are multiple counterterms allowed by symmetry. This is solidly in the territory of amplitudes that should diverge by all reckonings. So let's try to do that. Here it is. Now the first thing you notice about this expression is that it's not equal to zero. So this is a case. This was historically the first known case of any pure supergravity theory in 4 dimensions, well, ungauged supergravity theory, explicitly known to diverge. So this is a for loop divergence. The double copy here makes the SU4R symmetry manifest through this factor. But we see three distinct counterterms, which are labeled in analogy with sectors in Yang-Mills theory. So this would be like an MHV sector. This is an all plus or single minus. The analogy is that because of this, in the absence of the U1 duality symmetry, these latter two sectors would be protected by symmetry. But because there is a duality, they're not protected by symmetry, so they have divergences here. But one puzzling thing is that these three independent sectors have very similar divergences. They seem to be linked somehow, even though this first sector is not protected, or it would not be protected, or is not related to the duality symmetry. But how much can we really read into this factorization? Because this transcendental constant in front is quite simple. One thing we can try to do to answer that is to add vector multiplets to the theory. So if we add a number of vector multiplets, nv, what we find is that we get essentially the same result. We have this kinematic factor over here, and then some transcendental number that just depends on the number of vector multiplets now. It still only goes up to zeta 3. So even with vector multiplets in the theory, all three of these independent configurations still have a similar divergence. And this is very peculiar because this first sector, the non-anomalous sector, naively should have a very different analytic structure. And it's not related by any supersymmetry Ward identities or anything else to these other two sectors. And the factorization of these transcendental constants out front is slightly less trivial than it looks because, in principle, we could have also had zeta 4 and zeta 5 appearing. But if we look in more detail, we see that this NV, the number of vector multiplets, the dependence on it, is apparently consistent with the U1 anomaly. So let me explain what I mean by that. So this U1 anomaly is an anomaly in a U1 subgroup of this duality group, SU4 times SU1, 1, where, remember, the scalar degrees of freedom parameterize this SU1, 1 mod U1. We can gauge the U1 to linearize the action of the SU1, 1 so that the scalars become a complex doublet under the action of the global SU1, 1, but they pick up a local phase under U1. And there's some normalization condition. So anomalous in this sense means that different gauge choices for this U1 symmetry will give different theories at the quantum level. So the theories are going to differ by some local finite term in the effective action. From an amplitudes perspective, it was pointed out by Carrasco, Kallo, Zeitlin, and Roybon that these anomalous sectors, this one-loop anomaly in this theory, can contribute poor ultraviolet behavior to four-loop UV divergences, unless they're somehow canceled, as they apparently magically were at three loops. And these anomalous sectors even feed poor ultraviolet behavior into the MHV sector, as you can see from looking at this particular cut. I don't want to spend any time explaining this diagram, but this is from this paper here. The one key feature of this analysis is that each anomaly insertion here contributes a factor of NV plus 2. So this particular cut would contribute to anomalies, two factors of NV plus 2, multiplied by some two-loop integral. And to get a zeta 3 would require a three-loop integral, which leaves enough room for one anomaly insertion. So that looks completely consistent with what we see here. For the rational numbers in this expression, we have NV plus 2 squared, because there's a factor out front here. For the zeta 3, we only have the one factor. So the bottom line of this divergence looks specific to N equals 4 supergravity, and it's likely completely due to the anomaly. Although, the high loop order here prevents a really detailed analysis. Okay. But all this talk of anomalies makes me a little queasy. In light of a forthcoming paper by Byrne, Chung, Chi, Davies, Dixon, and Noli to appear soon, one might worry that we've done something really bad in N equals 4. It's because it has an anomaly. So in the presence of anomalies, what can happen is the ultraviolet divergence and the renormalization scale can become unlinked. In that case, the UV divergence, which we're using as a proxy for the log M squared terms, is no longer a good proxy. So we would be calculating something essentially unphysical, because what we really want to understand is this scale dependence. And two-loop calculations in this paper in Einstein gravity show this explicitly in the presence of the conformal anomaly. And if you want to hear more about this, you can look up Spee's talk at Strings this year. But thankfully, these worries don't apply in our case. We can verify all the subdivergence structure, see that all the subdivergences cancel away. And so, although this U1 duality symmetry is anomalous in N equals 4, in our cases, the UV still is linked to log M squared. Okay, phew. Now, I want to come to the punchline and talk about what we've termed enhanced cancellations. So recall, I pointed out three explicit examples of cases in N equals 4 supergravity and N equals 5 supergravity of ultraviolet cancellations that are completely unexplained through symmetry arguments. I'd like to know how exotic are the cancellations that are leading to these. So we can take a look at some of the symmetry considerations over the years. Here are some highlights. So Bjornsson and Green developed the first quantized formulation of N equals 8 supergravity based on Berkowitz's pure spinners. Beisert, Elvang, Friedmann, Kiermaier, Morales, and Steberger, I believe, used duality symmetry in N equals 8 to exhaustively rule out all counterterms up to 7 loops. And the 7 loop was this L equals N minus 1 case. And then Bossard, Howe, and Stell and Van Hove extended or generalized this case to N equals 4, 5, and 6 supergravities. But in all of these analyses, in all symmetry analyses to date, one has led to the same conclusion, that this case L equals N minus 1 has an allowed counterterm. From a unitarity perspective, we can try to understand why all of these approaches are leading to the same conclusion. And that is by looking at power counting on maximal cuts. So recall that N equals 4 supergravity through the double copy is constructed through pure Yang-Mills times N equals 4 super Yang-Mills. So one can focus in on just this particular three-loop diagram. In this case, the N equals 4 super Yang-Mills numerator is just S squared. The pure Yang-Mills numerator is exactly the same as one would get in pure Yang-Mills from Feynman diagrams, so it's logarithmically divergent. Even on the maximal cut of this diagram, the pure Yang-Mills numerator is logarithmically divergent. And no amount of standard symmetry transformations can push these log divergences into other terms to recombine them. So they're really stuck to these diagrams. And any cancellations beyond these that can be pushed around by symmetry, such as those between different diagrams or between different maximal cuts, we've just termed enhanced cancellations, because the first step to understanding something you have no idea about is to give it a name. I should mention that these enhanced cancellations are not present in non-abelian gauge theories. So it's still quite a mystery what is really underlying these cancellations. I believe that brings me to a summary. So I've given you these three known explicit examples of enhanced cancellations. In every one of these cases, power counting on the maximal cut suggests that these amplitudes should have ultraviolet divergences. And yet, when we add everything up at the end of the day, we see cancellations, very non-trivial cancellations, after integration between different contributions. That was four-dimensional theories, N equals 4 pure supergravity at 3 loops, N equals 5 pure supergravity is 4 loops. These were the L equals N minus 1 cases. And then we had this one in 5 dimensions at 2 loops. And as I've just said, there's no known standard symmetry explanation for any of these. So these enhanced cancellations that we're seeing here appear, at least, to be some qualitatively new mechanism for controlling the ultraviolet. Though this is still very mysterious, and it really awaits bold new ideas. So, thank you.
Yeah, wonderful talk. Are there any questions for Tristan? So, did you try some graph theoretic manipulations to trace back the origin of the enhanced cancellations, like co-products or some?
Gosh, no, we haven't. No. I mean, the for loop calculations, that would be a big undertaking. When we write down the expression, there are about a billion terms to start with. So these cancellations that go down to the number zero at the end of the day come from adding up a billion different things. So it's very difficult to
maybe
trace anything.
Some simpler toy example at lower loop order?
Yeah, maybe this half maximal supergravity at 2 loops may be a bit simpler.
Oh, yes.
Do you think it would be possible to take a non-renormalizable quantum field theory and double copy it and get a renormalizable gravity theory? I mean,
this is what we see kind of in this case, right? Okay. So one of the two copies is Yang-Mills theory in five dimensions.
Oh, right. Okay.
Although in this particular case, because it's down at two loops, we can trace the cancellation in this case back to renormalization of the F cubed counterterm. So a little of one side, a little of the other.
Okay, if there are no further questions, let's first of all thank Tristan again.